The Free Speech Coalition.
The Free Speech Coalition.
The Free Speech Coalition.
Free Speech Coalition.
The Free Speech Coalition.
The Free Speech Coalition.
Podcast.
Welcome to the Free Speech Coalition podcast. My name is Dane Giroux. And today we have with us Ward Carmel. Ward Carmel is a business consultant, a writer, an accomplished broadcaster, and, love this quote I found online, a warm and humorous MC, as opposed to my whack MC, I guess.
More cold-hearted on your part, Dane.
So when it says warm, how warm? Is listening to this podcast going to be like drying your damp socks in front of a toasty fire, cup of cocoa in hand? Or
listening to me is literally sitting in front of the fire, warm cocoa, your loved one to your side. You go away, and what happens at the end of the podcast? Well, you know, there'll be children tomorrow is all I can say.
Fantastic. Let's start by just giving people a bit of background on who you are. So just introduce yourself to the people.
I'm an everyman. I have a long history of doing lots of things. I, of course, was a broadcaster with Māori Television. I used to front a show there called Native Affairs, and prior to that was also the front man for a show called Focus. Both of them were current affairs shows that we ran from Māori Television. And I'm also known to have a slightly better known sister, Miriam Makamo, that fronts Marae and fronts Sunday. But my views, I can assure you, are not necessarily her views.
So this is a crazy broad question, but many people are going to want to know, what's the Māori position on free speech? Because if we're to believe some Māori academics, it's indistinguishable from the woke view of shut down all offensive chat. So is there any truth to this?
There is simply no such thing as one Māori world view. This, I think, is if we're going to ever use the word racist, and I am loath to use the word at best of times, if there was one racist view of Māori, it's that we all have the one homogenous view, that there is one Māori view on free speech, that there is one Māori view on politics, that we all vote for the same party. That is a nonsense. There are a multiplicity of views on free speech amongst Māori, just as there are on the broader population around the world.
The times that I've been on marae, speech seems to be given a real primacy.
We have a saying called "Te kai a tarangatira he kōrero." The food of chiefs is speech. It's talking. The only way that you got things done, the only way you got agreements between groups, just like every other group of humans in our entire history, was the ability to speak and to try and sort things out. And sometimes that speech would lead to peaceful outcomes, and every now and then it may actually lead to more aggressive outcomes. The whole thing around free speech is that, frankly, on a marae, you are free to say what the heck you like, and you are free to face the consequences of saying whatever the heck you like. The idea that you would just naturally abridge what you said because, well, it was disrespectful is simply not true. And I have a wonderful example over in Waikanae when my tupuna, Tarangi Topiora, boy, you crossed her at your peril. She was at one stage there, was called a barking dog by one of the chiefs at the time, which, believe it or not, was a very risky thing to do, but he managed to get away with it. Well, history says he got away with it. The bottom line, interestingly, Rewaka in Kaikoura was said to have insulted Tropraha by saying that if Tropraha came down, his belly would be cut open with a knife. The point being is that insult was given and insult was returned. So speech was free. You just had to be able to face the consequences of that free speech. And that takes it back to today. There is no such thing as speech that is simply beyond the pale. What there is a speech that's going to invite a response. And this is what we Māori are really about. You want to give speech, you want to talk on a marae, you want to talk out in public, do so and be prepared to face the consequences and the pushback that may come from that speech. But the one thing we are not is shrinking violets. We're not going to wither up and die if someone says stupid things about our people. We're going to push back.
I've got this quote here from a E Tangata piece by Māori academic Moana Jackson that I just want to read to you, and we can chew it over. So, quote, "The right to free speech has often been similarly troubling because it has too often meant the freedom to hurt, despise, and belittle Māori. Cartoons published a few years ago depicting fat and lazy Māori taking advantage of free school lunches were found by the court to be objectively offensive but protected by free speech, and the fact that they weren't offensive enough to incite a reasonable person to hatred or violence against our people. Is free speech in New Zealand, does it amount to a license to offend Māori?
Yes. Short and simple, yes it is. Yes, you may insult us. Yes, you may offend us. That is the entire point of free speech. In the case it was referred to around the cartoons, of course they were offensive. They were designed to be offensive. And what's the crime? Why shouldn't they be? We're big enough to push back on that sort of nonsense. And it was a nonsense cartoon. The bulk of our people don't live like that at all. It was designed to elicit response, and Moana Jackson waded straight into it. It was a foolish move on his behalf. He should have just called it out for the nonsense that it was, rather than try to use it as a platform to shut down free speech. The very means by which Moana can get up and talk is the very reason that he's able to do so, is because of the fights that went on trying to get free speech back in the past. The funny thing is, we Māori had free speech. It was the arrival of Pākehā law that saw some of that speech curtailed, where we saw laws imposed that said that some speech was okay, some wasn't. Well, prior to that, all speech was, wasn't necessarily okay, but you could say what the heck you like. And I'm going to go back to my original point. You were free to say what you wanted to say, and you were free to face the consequences of that speech. You know, you could give insult in the old days amongst Māori, and that would invite a response. And sometimes that response wasn't necessarily physical. It may not come from the physical world, but we'd often say, well, that one got sick because they said things about that person that simply shouldn't have been said, and now they're facing the consequences of that, and it might be a spiritual sickness that they experienced it. But negativity generally invites negativity. Positivity generally invites positivity. Bottom line, speech should always be free. Apart from where speech actually incites real physical violence and yelling fire in a theatre. That's about the only speech that should be restricted, and even then, we need to be careful about what we're restricting.
I've got another quote from Moana Jackson, and I'm going to go on a bit of a rant after this because it really, you know, a few thoughts went through my mind when I read it. So, quote, "Most pleasingly, perhaps, the protesters seem to realise..." And the protesters here, he's writing about, this is 218, he's writing about the protesters pushing back against Stefan Molyneux and Lawrence Southern wanting to give a speech in an Auckland Council building. "The protesters seem to realise that the much-touted right to offend that is regarded as part of free speech is often just a mask which obscures a desire to hurt and damage the most vulnerable in society," end quote. Now, the right to offend isn't a part of free speech. It is free speech. You know, that's it. I had this issue with comedian Raybon Khan. He wrote a really nasty stuff article about us. Jackson, too, doesn't seem to understand the concept. If you challenge any orthodoxy, you're going to ruffle feathers. And as a progressive concept, free speech exists to actively encourage offensive speech in order that power be constantly kept in check. And an irony here, I don't know if you'd agree with me, but an irony here is that Jackson himself represents power, really, insofar as he's a symbol of a certain institutional view of Māori and colonisation and so forth that many other Māori would like to probably challenge. And if he personally wrote hate speech laws, he's going to protect his positions with them, isn't he? If he was the author of these laws, his school of thought, to the detriment of dissenting Māori.
You know, the funny thing is that Moana Jackson came into play in the 1980s with an amazing treatise on Māori and the justice system. It was a voice in the wilderness. It was a very unpopular voice at the time, and I think if the powers that be could have shut him down, they would have. But the very thing that enabled him to get that voice heard was free speech, and he exercised it appropriately, and he exercised it to the fullest extent possible. The consequence of that free speech was real focus on Māori criminal offending and Māori in the justice system, and Moana's stocks went up, and he is, of course, the high-ranking and well-respected rangatira that he is today. But the fact that somebody can be well-respected and high-ranking does not mean they're not subject to criticism. And I simply do not agree with Moana when he says now that that some speech may need to be curtailed in the interests of, I don't know, public safety or public cohesion. I'm not certain what his argument is, But when he says that the right to offend means the right to hurt, he's absolutely correct. When you say offensive things, you are saying things that can be hurtful. But again, I draw the line and say, well, are you bleeding? Has a limb been removed? Is your life in danger because someone said something mean about you? And the short answer is, no, it's not. And so if someone wishes to say something offensive, they can, and we can socially ostracize them for doing so. And frankly, I would take personal attacks on Wynah Jackson. I would take that personally, because for all that I may not agree with him, I will still stand alongside him and recognize the money that the man has. Now, let's go to Lauren Southern and Stephen Molyneux. I can't remember. I had never heard of Stephen Molyneux prior to his coming to New Zealand. I had heard of Lauren Southern, and I just thought she was what we'd say in Māori, a nanakia, bit of a rascal, someone that likes to stir things up a bit, and I've got no problem with stirrers. Stephen Molyneux, never heard of him. So when they decided they wanted to shut him down, I immediately jumped online to find out who this fellow was, as did countless New Zealanders. They couldn't have done more to promote his views than they did by trying to shut him down. That's what suddenly got me aware of who this character actually was. But if they'd have just let him speak, said nothing, he'd have wandered into the country. So would have Lauren Southern. There'd have been however many turn up to the free speech event or whatever it was that they were doing. Most of New Zealand would never have heard of them coming in and wouldn't have heard of them going out either. And that would have been the most effective way to deal with them, just turn your back on these guys. But no, they had to go and try and shut them down, which they didn't shut them down. They thought they won by stopping them going to Auckland Town Hall. But actually, Lauren Southern and Stephen Molyneux got media coverage that they probably would never have got if they'd have been allowed to just speak.
They ended up doing
it. It was an own goal.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they ended up doing like a half-hour interview with Patrick Gower.
Yes, they did. And even Patrick Gower admits that he got his backside handed to him. But the point is that these are well-versed people. But again, if nothing had been said and they'd just been allowed to talk, most of us wouldn't have known that they were going to be in the country and being whatever you want to call them. Instead, they were fully promoted, and there's probably now a huge number of Kiwis following Stephen Molyneux and following Lauren Southern as a result of the attempts to shut them down. It was a genuine own goal.
Yeah, it was an own goal. I guess that, some in trying to steel man the argument of some of these people, they probably thought that, just letting a whole lot of incel types or whatever they call them or, just go in without any pushback and just listen to them and might have been dangerous because they would have been but they're going to be exposed to their ideas either way, aren't they? They're going to be exposed to their ideas either way. Trying to censor them just ensures that more people get to hear the ideas, where it would have been probably about 150 people that night, and that would have been it.
That would have been about it, but now we've got thousands able to hear them because of the free promotion that they were given by blocking them. Look, we're seeing an equal thing occurring over in the United States at the moment, where we're seeing voices shut down that are beyond the pale. I mean, they're even talking about shutting down the president of the United States, and I don't care whether you like or don't like Donald Trump. You do not shut down the president of the United States.
No.
He is never beyond the pale. The way that you shut him down is to vote him out at the end of this year if you don't like him, but you do not shut his office down. So Twitter thinks that they can sort of shadow ban him. I think Facebook's looking to do the same thing. Twitch has pretty much gotten rid of him. So where's he gone? He's gone on to Parler. And there are other apps coming online now that will allow this. So all that happens is that the market responds. Every attempt to try and shut down free speech will see a new app created where that free speech will go. You are not going to stop it. The best way to deal with speech you don't like is to meet it head on with speech you think is better. And Dane, can I just take this back to the original point around where Māori stand? The whole point about free speech is that in certain environments, you have social norms that control what you say. You go into a marae in a formal situation and you do formal speeches, you're hardly likely going to give insult at that point there, because if you did, the very first thing is that you are a very rude person and you will lose the audience. The whole audience will turn on you if they realise that you're being rude in that opening speech. Equally, when the formalities are finished and then you go into the hui proper, where the speech is a lot freer, less controlled, again, you're still required to engage in certain social mores, if you like, that enable speech to generally be accepted. But you start to step beyond that, you'll get a pushback. And this is what we forget with free speech. You are free to say what you like, and you're free to face the consequences. There are social norms that will either stop you from saying the stupidest of stupid things or will hold you to account for the stupidest of stupidest things that you might say. And we've forgotten this.
Well, a lot of people would say that that's all the laws are going to do. But what I don't like about that is you're taking the moral power off us and giving it to the state, aren't you? We should be making those decisions about, you know, what we should and shouldn't say. We should be navigating those. And that's right. I mean, you know, if you go into a bar and you want to start a conversation with a woman, there's the right way to do it and there's the disastrous way to do it. We've all been there.
That's free speech.
That's free speech. And, you know, and if you're a fast learner, as I luckily was as a young man, I learned very quickly to do it the right way. You know, like that's the way it should work. It's the whole idea of, we have this idea in the Torah of, you know, how Pharaoh's heart is hardened. So when Moses says, let our people go, you know, his heart is hardened. Now, some people read that as a stacking of the deck. It's like, oh, that's unfair. They stack the deck against Pharaoh, so fate could basically play out for Moses, right? But we have another reading of that, and that is that with all the plagues and everything happening around him, he could have made the choice to let the Israelites go out of fear. But God wanted him to make a moral decision. So he hardened his heart against the fear of the plagues, so he would make a moral decision to let them go. And that's what we need to be allowed to do. You know, the state shouldn't be making moral decisions like that for us. We should be making those decisions.
The state has little place in the day-to-day affairs of people, including how they speak to each other. The state's job is to make laws for the good of, so a country can effectively run. But once it starts intervening in day-to-day relationships between people, including at a community and even at a provincial national level, you're really starting to step into areas I think get very problematic for our communities. At the end of the day, we have social conventions and mores that control the way we behave with each other. You be rude to people, the chances are service won't come your way. The chances are you won't get jobs. There's all sorts of social ways. And in many ways, for all that I'm critical of Twitter, Twitter is that environment where, what do they call it? It's the old public arena, isn't it? So long as states aren't interfering in that, and let's be clear, so long as Twitter isn't actually acting as a media outlet, which I think it is, a media outlet,
and it probably is
now subjecting itself to the need to be state regulated. But if it kept clear of that and just allowed conversation to flow, again, people saying stupid racist things can be responded to and highlighted. Look, the level of racism that we face today in the 2000s doesn't even begin to compare to 1980 when I was a teenager and starting to see it firsthand in the letters to the editor. And then I think of Tepini O'Regan, one of my chiefs from NATO, who points out that the racism of the 1980s that he was talking about was nothing in comparison to the racism of the 1960s with letters to the editor that were being written then. To say that we are somehow or other more racist today and that we need our speech restricted as a consequence is an absolute nonsense. In fact, the most insulting thing you can do nowadays is to accuse someone of being a racist. Back in my day, it was to be called an F-wit or, you know, language of that sort, but that's nothing now. You get called the R-word, you're in trouble. You're in a great deal of trouble, so people are at absolute pains to avoid it. My concern with the R-word is the racist word, is that we use it as a stick to beat people with, you know, when we don't like their views. So if someone says, I don't agree with the RMA and that we should go consulting every single iwi on whether a window should be changed in our building or not, that's not racism. That's practical. That's them saying, I'm not certain about these consultation requirements with every iwi around. And frankly, as a Māori, I agree with it. And as a Māori that is still involved, I've been a CEO of a Māori operation. Frankly, I don't want a whole bunch of requests coming to me as to whether I approve of a window going in a commercial building or not. And it won't surprise me if most of the other iwi share the similar view. It is not racist to point out that that is problematic and doesn't work.
Here's a question, and it's a pretty intense one. So I'm glad you're sitting down. Are Māori living in daily existential dread due to Dr. Don Brash?
Oh my gosh! I mean, I'm trying to find a rational and logical way to respond to that question. You know, you're talking about a 70-year-old man who, having met him physically, is tiny, presents certainly no physical threat to any of us. What happened to our people? We were, you know, to quote Alan Duff, you know, we were once warriors, and now suddenly we're hurt by an old man who says things on the media and Twitter. This is an absolute insult to our people, to the robustness of us as a people, to our ability to stand up and push back against views that we don't like. And no Māori I know lives in existential dread of Don Brash. That is a nonsense beyond belief, and I don't care who said it. I really don't. I don't care which leader said it. I'll look them in the eye and say to them, bollocks.
Well, Dr. Ella Henry was interviewed on the panel, I think, after Don Brash had that talk shut down by the Vice-Chancellor of Massey University, and she gave the perfect answer to this, really. She said that every time Don Brash rubbishes Te Reo Māori in the press, the whole nation engages in a two-week discussion on the topic. So it's a bit like the Stefan Molyneux thing, like the whole attention thing.
We should encourage him.
Well,
that's
more. Right.
Say more, Don. You're helping.
Yeah, Ella's
right.
Well, it's actually true. Like when you're a minority, and this is sad, and we know it as a Jewish community, it's a numbers game. You know, there's not a lot of us. So you can find yourselves severely starved for airtime on some of the topics you want to talk about. And some of those polarizing figures are the people that finally get you that media attention. It's not ideal. I mean, in a perfect world, we wouldn't want it to be that way. But I think many activists understand this dance too. And when Don Brash has something to say, you know, they take advantage of it and promote the language.
He's the best thing that happens to us as Māori, because Ella absolutely is correct. He gets us talking about Māori things for the next 2 weeks. Bottom line is, I've never heard Don say that the language is a waste of time. But what he has said is that he doesn't want to learn it. He also queries why the rest of New Zealand should be forced to learn it, and it is a fair question. I actually do think New Zealanders should be required to learn Māori, certainly at primary school. I think it is an essential part of who we are as a country. It's part of our character. It's part of our culture as New Zealand, not just as Māori. And I do think you should have a basic understanding of the of Māori as a language, as an official language of the country. So that's how I'd respond to it. So for all of the people that think I'm agreeing with Don Brash, I don't. I actually do believe in an element of compulsion, just as my kids have to learn English, reading, writing and arithmetic at primary school. But if we can't sell the language by the time a kid's turned 13, having given them those 6-odd years at primary school, then we're probably not doing a very good job. But the cool thing is, even if they choose to walk away from the language at age 13, they've got enough there that if they're not necessarily communicating, they're probably pronouncing it with a modicum of ability, and they feel comfortable around the language. So I disagree with Don, but I understand the question, and I will push back with better argument.
Yeah. I'm very much pro all our children learning Māori for all sorts of reasons. As you say, I mean, the Māori language is the language of this country. And it should be taught. If English is going to be taught, Māori should be taught.
Well, what I would argue, especially to our free speech community that might have a problem with what you and I are saying, is that, hey, hang on a second, we've now got double the amount of words to be free that we can use freely if we agree in free speech.
That's right.
So I think it's an added bonus to require at least the language be taught up to age 13.
Yeah.
More language to speak freely with.
And the other thing is, like, children, like my youngest boy is, all my children for their bar and bat mitzvahs had to learn Hebrew, but my youngest boy has been doing classes every day with a Hebrew speaker. So he's doing, you know, written Hebrew, but also conversational stuff. He is such a star, right? He's picking it up so quickly because of the young mind. And we know that if people are bilingual, you know, they'll just continue to absorb more and more languages. So it's just fantastic for their minds. And the other thing is, you know, learning Hebrew myself, I was able to, you know, read the text of the Tanakh or the Torah and see where the translation wasn't quite working. And it was quite interesting, because I'd find like one line and I'd think, what's going on here? And then I'd really dive into it, and maybe I'd call a friend I knew. And it took me into the mind of the ancient Jewish people. You know, I really got a better sense of the time in that. And, you know, I've done a lot of work. I don't talk about it too much, but I've done a lot of work with Māori language, 10 years basically of you know, comedies. And before comedies, I was doing documentaries and all sorts of stuff. I absorbed a lot of Maori language. Like, I can't really speak. If I'm sitting in an edit suite, I get the gist of what people are saying. And it did start taking me into the Maori worldview. You know?
Well, it can't but not, especially if you start thinking in Maori. And the one thing that we need to understand is that your ability to understand a culture and a language has got nothing to do with your blood. It's got to do with how you're raised. And the easiest way to contemplate that is that I'm Ngāti Mutunga from the Chatham Islands, I'm Ngāi Tahu from the South Island, and I'm also Ngāti Toa from Wellington region. But I don't really think Ngāti Toa because I wasn't raised with them. But I do think Ngāti Mutunga and I do think Ngāi Tahu because I was raised around it. So if you're a Pākehā that's been fully raised and immersed in Te Ao Māori, then the chances are you understand it as well as any Māori would because that's been your cultural upbringing. But one of the things I want to pick up on, Dane, is around the whole area of Māori and free speech and disagreement. Is at the time when Moana Jackson came forward in the 1980s with his views on Māori criminal offending, there was a sociologist, a professor of sociology at the time, Greg Newbold, who disagreed with Moana on many of these things. And Greg was accused of being a racist. Now, Greg had spent a lot of time in jail himself. He'd been in on heavy drug charges. He wrote a book called The Big Huey while he was inside, and I think that was the basis for his...
It's a good book.
Yeah, well, it was the basis, I believe, for his PhD in the end. And Greg came out and is a well-renowned sociologist as a result. But the point being that whilst Greg was being called a racist at the time, Greg Newbold was sitting next to me in Māori class at Canterbury University studying the language. And I remember looking at him and looking at these headlines and thinking something here doesn't compute. This just does. Why would a racist be sitting in Māori language classes next to me? He had a genuine desire to learn the language. Some might argue he had a genuine desire to learn the language so he could argue his points in Māori. Wouldn't that have been amazing if he could have?
Mm.
To actually have him disagreeing with Moana in the reel is an outcome I can only pray for, to be honest. But, we've got to be careful when we start pitching certain words at certain people. Moana never used that word, but back then those that were trying to defend him were accusing Professor Greg Newbold of being a racist. Well, he bloody wasn't. Similarly, when I hear the accusations against Dr. Don Bresch, look, I don't agree with a great deal of what Don says, but nor do I think he's a racist. I think he's just got a worldview that doesn't agree with mine. And so I will debate him on that worldview, and I might win some of those, and I may find that some of the dearly held arguments that I have don't stand up under good argument, and I've got to go back and revisit them and rethink.
This has been great, by the way. I mean, we should do it again. I think there's a lot that we can talk about. We can really talk around the world. And we're buddies, aren't we? We're buddies, you and I. We're mates.
You're not going to put that in. You're not going to put that in the middle, right? So,
he's going to.
These two are. They're in a circle. You know the word that I'm going to use, and it'll get me in trouble if I do say it.
Yeah. So, what have you got coming up? Have you got anything special on the boil?
Well, let's not hide the fact my wife is in politics and she's about to go campaigning. So the whole focus for the next 2.5 months is on whether or not my wife can win her babe back into parliament or not. Mm. So that's the primary focus for the family. And I'm getting back. Fortunately, we opened talking about me being an MC. Well, that appears to be coming back as well. So as the country gradually reopens, so do my gigs come back on top of that. And look, as an MC, people often say, well, why would you talk about things like free speech and as an MC? Because the very thing that we do as MCs is we speak. And often for us, it's actually about telling a joke, pushing up against boundaries and knowing where the line is to be drawn on that. I mean, I have complete ability to speak freely when I'm up in front of a stage, say in front of the property council or these various other gigs that I've ever done. But again, social mores ensure that I never step across that line, even though I have the freedom to do so. And this is what people forget. You may have the freedom to say certain things, but there are always consequences. You don't need a government to step in. We can sort that out amongst ourselves as a community. And as an MC, I know where the boundary is and I make sure I never step across it.
Fantastic, and a fantastic place to end, I think, Ward. Ward, great to see you, and we'll catch up soon.
We've got some other things to talk about, mate.
Next time. Yeah, we could just go on and on. So thank you, everyone, for listening to the Free Speech Coalition. Go to our website, freespeechcoalition.nz, if you'd like to donate, or just check out some of the blog posts we have and more of the podcast. Thanks, Ward. We'll catch up again soon.
Sounds good, Dane.